It is Tuesday, January the 10th, 2023. It's episode 71 of Tone the Slab, Pitching with David Cone, where we talk pitching every single week. We do it with the five-time world champion, David Cone. James Smythe is here, along with myself, Justin Shackle. Producer Dan Rourke also with us. We have a lot to get to here this week. We're going to be focusing on some pitching storylines in the National League with the Dodgers. The Phillies made a big trade for their bullpen. We'll also get into the recent additions to the baseball operations department for the New York Yankees. Gentlemen, how are we doing today? How do you pass the time on your weekends in the month of January?
You know what? The countdown's on, right? I mean, when you get past the new year, you start looking at spring training. When do we have to go to Tampa? When's the first spring training game? When's the first Yes Network game? You know, those sorts of things are like right around the corner. So let's go. I mean, the countdown's on.
The NFL playoffs can only get us so far. So that's great in January, getting to February. Then once you get past the Super Bowl, it's like, all right, now we can start baseball.
So David, you're spending your weekend like at the table mapping out your schedule, your calendar here. What?
You're trying to figure out the schedule, that's for sure. Certainly on the Sunday night schedule with ESPN, trying to figure out the travel schedule and trying to mesh that with a Yes Network schedule. So yeah, that does take up some time. But you know, I have always got one eye on Patrick Mahomes. That's my guy. You know, I'm a Kansas City native, Kansas City Chiefs fan, and Mahomes is just a magician. You know, what he's done over the last 4 or 5 years there in Kansas City, the run they've had is just nothing short of remarkable. They're fun to watch. They've got their flaws. You know, the Chiefs, like every team, no team's perfect, but it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what happens throughout the playoffs with Patrick Mahomes and what he does.
I'm not going to pretend like I've been fully invested in the football season this year. I have not watched a single full game of NFL action this season. So excited for the postseason, because that trend's probably going to change in the month of January, because NFL playoff football is superb. But yeah, it hasn't been the biggest football watching season for me, at least. But Patrick Mahomes is the kind of guy where, like, David, everything you said, I'm going to obviously take your word for it, because he is an all-world talent for sure. All right. The topics to get to earlier that we mentioned at the start of this show, but we always begin every single episode with the opener. David, what do you have for us this week?
Well, I you know, on a sad note and a supportive note, you know, this is a shout out to Liam Hendricks, the veteran reliever of the White Sox, all-star reliever, great short guy. He's pre-announced that he's been diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and he's going to be treated for cancer. And it's a devastating news for him and his family. He and his wife are so involved in the Chicago area off the field. One of the real good guys in this game from Australia was nominated for the Roberto Clemente Award. He deserves the support of the entire community right now, the baseball world. Shout out goes to Liam Hendricks. We wish him well in his treatment for cancer at this point.
Yeah, just a tough thing to see. You know, he announced this on Sunday. He is going to be beginning treatment on Monday, the day we're recording this, January the 9th. So best wishes go out to him. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, thankfully, one of the, you know, most treatable cancers that is out there. According to the American Cancer Society, the survival rate for at least 5 years post-diagnosis is over 70%. It accounts for about 4% of all cancers. Obviously just something tough to see, but like you said, I think you hit all the points there, David. We wish Liam and his family all the best as he begins this journey here. And baseball's the furthest thing you know, that should be on the mind for everyone involved with Liam. We wish him the best here as he begins this fight. Speaking of relievers, we have, again, that trade that we were talking about that happened late last week over the weekend between the Phillies and the Tigers with Gregory Soto. We're going to get at that in a moment. Let's start with what the Dodgers did back on Friday, because it was January 6th, which was the deadline for them to decide what they would be doing with Trevor Bauer. We talked about it last episode, whether they would release Bauer, retain him. What would be next for Bauer? Let's focus on the Dodgers here. no secret that LA is trying to reset the luxury tax this offseason. They haven't big spenders. They haven't been involved with some of the big name free agents. When it comes to their pitching activity this offseason, they did some activity. They re-signed Clayton Kershaw, but they also added Noah Syndergaard. They added Shelby Miller as well. I'm wondering, what questions does this pitching staff have with about a month to go before spring training?
Well, I think it's that sort of a year, and we've seen this with the Yankees a few years ago, where the primary objective is to stay under the luxury tax, reset the luxury tax. Now, the Dodgers, as far as that goes, have been over the luxury tax by leaps and bounds for several years now. So they're going to try to hit the reset button, and they're in a good position to do so because of their farm system. So it's time to really, if you look at the Dodgers, you're evaluating their farm system. They're going to get a look at a lot of their young players. A lot of those young pitchers, young position players are going to get a chance finally. And the Dodgers really have been the envy of the industry because of that. Both they can sign free agents. They can make big trades. They can go get a Mookie Betts. They can re-sign their own free agents like Clayton Kershaw, but then they also have a big farm system that keeps feeding them. So now it's time to really take stock in the farm system with the Dodgers. I don't see them going over the luxury tax unless it's really absolutely, you know, a game changer, a needle mover, as they say. But I think this is the year they really do try to hit the reset button, much like the Yankees did a few years ago.
You bring up the reset button. Their reset is a pretty high floor. So we think about where they're coming from. Last year, they won 111 games. They allowed the fewest runs in the major leagues. Their rotation had a 2.75 ERA, best in the majors. Their bullpen had a 2.87 ERA, second best in the majors to Houston, best in the National League. They always make it work. So you got to figure, until they show that they take a big step back, I'm going to trust them.
That's the perfect sentiment. Like, until a team like that proves they can't do it, there's no reason to believe that they shouldn't. But I think they're also going to have to lean into some of the younger arms on their pitching staff. We're seeing the changing of the guard in the positional department, like David was mentioned. But when you take a look at names like Michael Grove, Ryan Pepio, guys we saw late last season, you're probably going to be asking them to contribute impact innings at the back of the starting rotation. And again, I truly believe, like, until they prove otherwise, you have to believe in them. At the same time, I'm like, okay, you factor in the youthful arms that are, you know, you need those contributions from. And then in the front end, there are a lot of health concerns at the front end with Kershaw, with Syndergaard, with Gonsolin, throw him in there as well. Dustin May. Yeah. I mean, they're all there. So if you were going to try and formulate, obviously they make it work. Like James said, they find a way to get it done. But if you could try and map out a route, how they're going to do it, who's going to have to be leaned on and who's going to have to step up, you think?
Oh, that is the question. I think you're going to have to lean on the young guys, you know, and bear in mind, too, that the Dodgers system was pretty loaded. And in fact, that they gave up one of their top pitching prospects to the Yankees. Clayton Beter is one of their top big right-handed power guys that they gave up in the Joey Gallo trade last summer. So they're pretty loaded. And some of the names you haven't heard of, some of the names are on the move in their minor league system. You mentioned Pepio, some of the guys that have gotten a cup of coffee or that have gotten their feet wet in the big leagues. I mean, that's really what it's going to be. As you said, I mean, you have to expect that there's going to be some injuries. Clayton Kershaw might give you 25 starts. He might give you 120 to 150 innings. And Gonsolin, the same thing. I mean, that's sort of the bar that's been set. It's a little lower. 150 innings is what 200 innings used to be. And that's why James Smythe has been all over the sort of qualifier without getting into it. I don't want to set James off on a tangent here, but he's exactly right. I mean, the qualifier is much lower nowadays. 150 innings is the new 200 innings.
Many hands make light work, filling in all the extra innings, you know, en masse. But you look at someone like Ryan Pepio, who's got a great fastball change combo. He can take on a little more of a role. You think of someone like Bobby Miller, who's one of the more highly touted pitching prospects. He's probably more of a double A guy, so maybe he's somebody that can, you know, come parachuting in late in the season if he's having a good year in the minors. But I feel like the Dodgers are, there are some question marks, but I feel like they're well equipped to take on the workload.
Do these question marks warrant me to ask you guys this? Is this maybe the first time in nearly a decade that the Dodgers are not the preseason favorites to win the NL West?
I mean, it's a question. Yes. I mean, it's a valid question at this point for all the reasons that you brought up, Shaq, that, you know, the depth of their pitching staff, how are they going to piece it together? How good are their young prospects? The health of the overall staff, but they still have Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman at the top of their order. They still have probably still the best top of the order of anybody in the game right now, or certainly at or near the top. So you still expect them to play really well. I think the thing about the Dodgers was, in watching them in recent years, they had athletes all over the field. They did a lot of things well. They played good defense. They ran the bases well. They hit for average. They had a high on base percentage. They had some pop in their lineup. They really just sort of did everything. They're kind of everything across the board, baseball players across the board and athletes all over the field. I think that's what I think of when I think about the Dodgers is you know, even though they faltered in the playoffs last year, even though they fell short of closing the deal, what they thought they were going to do with that amazing regular season, they still have athletes everywhere. And that's what I think of when I think about the Dodgers.
It's closer. The Padres are a beast. I get it. At the same time, the Dodgers won the NL West last year by 22 games. So they have a bit of a cushion in that regard to me.
I may have missed it. I'm not sure, but I don't believe the three of us even uttered the name Julio Urías during this conversation.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Well, so we were talking about guys with more health concerns and,
right. You know,
he was, it's almost like he's a given.
Exactly.
In the Dodger rotation.
Coming off a career year, another fantastic season, and he is at the top of the Dodger rotation right now. So he's also going to be a free agent after this upcoming season, which leads me to this question here, guys. Which National League starting pitcher could receive an extension first? Will it be Urías? Could it be Max Fried, who we discussed a couple weeks ago with his situation in Atlanta, or Logan Webb, who won't be a free agent until after 2025, but the Giants apparently have a lot of cash to spend because they weren't able to convert here through the free agent market this offseason. So will it be Urías, again, free agent after this season, Max Fried, free agent after the 2024 season, or Webb, a free agent after 2025? Who do you have?
Well, judging by the Atlanta blueprint, the Braves, the way they go about it, and Alex Anthopoulos, you'd probably think Max Fried would be at the top of the list, although we don't know whether he's willing to roll the dice or not, because he is that good. And if he does wait it out, he could be at the top of the heap in terms of maximizing his value. So that's the question with Max Fried. Does he have that interest in him to be able to maximize his value and play this string out? Or will he want to fall in line with the rest of the Braves down there and try to be part of something where they can win for a lot of years in a row and buy into that Atlanta Braves methodology down there? The other guy that I think is interesting to me, and you mentioned, you know, Urías, if I were the Dodgers, I'd look at him. He's got that it factor. Maybe he doesn't light up the spin rate or the metrics or the radar guns, but he really does have the guts out on the mound. That just that aggressiveness that really sets him apart, that mindset that's hard to quantify, that scouts love. When you look at Urías, and as you mentioned, I'm glad you brought him up, you know, he's a difference maker because of his attitude and his presence on the mound. So I don't think the Giants probably are ready for Logan Webb just yet. They're really smart the way they run their team. So I think maybe they probably try to wait just a little longer, especially with the health of pitchers, and maybe trying to see what kind of a year he has this year. So, you know, I'm not sure that he's the candidate as of yet, but if I'm the Dodgers, I'm looking at Urías, and maybe trying to get something done, especially considering, you know, the age on Kershaw, how much more time he has left, and who's going to lead that staff, especially if you're going with a lot of younger guys that are moving up through the system.
I love that question with the step ladder nature of it, because Urias has 1 year until free agency. Max Fried has two, and then Logan Webb has three. That's why I'll go with Webb, because he's furthest from free agency. I think Urias, if there was a time to do it, it would have been, you know, a year or two ago. I feel like he's already close enough to free agency where that door is knocking right there, and you say, okay, he's close enough where he can roll the dice. Similar with Fried, maybe he signs an extension, but 2 years from free agency, he's already made it this far. Maybe he rolls the dice. Webb is a little further away, so I guess I'll go with him.
I think from the Giants team perspective, I think there's probably little sense in, I don't want to call it rushing, but they have some wiggle room, you know, basically say, hey, Logan, show us again in 2023. And then maybe we could talk. I think it would be Fried, mainly because of the track record the Braves have built with giving out their contract extensions. But Urias makes me think this. We were talking about the objective for the Dodgers this offseason, kind of resetting the number with their payroll. Like, David, from a player's perspective, maybe the Dodgers generally want to do a long-term deal with Julio Urias, but their message to him right now is, hey, like, we're obviously trying to do something financially with our payroll at the moment. At the end of the regular season or postseason, you're going to be our first priority. We want to keep you. We want to have you here long term. Like, does a player though even want to hear that, or is it just business being business? And hey, I'm going to be a free agent. I'm open to all the suitors. Or do they have an understanding of what the team is trying to do at that financial level?
That's a great point and well said. And James is right. You know, he's so close to free agency. And if I'm his agent, you're saying, hey, just put up big numbers, you know, and follow the Aaron Judge model here. I mean, Aaron Judge, if you're looking for inspiration, look at Aaron Judge, you know, the ultimate big play and bet on yourself season. So it is interesting. There's a way to structure the contract though, and backload it a little bit and kind of still wiggle structurally and keep under the luxury tax this year, but it's a valid point. Maybe that's what the Dodgers are thinking as well. Maybe they're relating that to his agent that yes, that there's, you know, have a big year, we're there at the end and we'll be there for you. But yeah, I mean, you can still come up with a structure. If you really want to lock this guy up now and keep him from the other 29 teams bidding on him, there's a way to structure that contract and avoid that scenario if you can. So if I'm a free agent nowadays, I mean, it worked for Aaron Judge. Call my agent anytime. I'm not putting deadlines down there. Aaron Judge put the deadline and it worked good for him last spring training. And you put the onus on the Yankees. If I'm Julio Urias right now, I'm like, hey, call my agent anytime you want. You know, I'm going to go out and pitch. Don't talk to me. Talk to my agent. You know, we're open for business anytime you want.
He's still so young. Looking at it, he's 26. So if he goes through this season and enters free agency on schedule, he's going to be going into his age 27 season after finishing seventh in the Cy Young voting and leading the league in wins with 20 in 2021. And then last year, finishing third in the Cy Young and leading the NL with a 2.16 ERA. Fantastic pitcher.
A lot of talk early on this episode about the Dodgers, who had the most pressure on them entering the postseason after a 111 win campaign. Conversely, the Philadelphia Phillies didn't have too much pressure on them in the postseason, yet they go on to win the pennant before ultimately falling to the Astros. And the Phillies are making moves to be better in 2023. They completed a trade with the Tigers where they received two-time All-Star reliever Gregory Soto and Cody Clemens, an infielder that made his big league debut last season for Detroit. They were traded to Philadelphia in exchange for Matt Vierling, Nick Maton, and Donnie Sands. Soto's the centerpiece in terms of the here and now, and he joins a bullpen that has also added Craig Kimbrell this offseason and Matt Strom. Are we completely past the days where the Phillies bullpen is like the butt of every relief pitching joke? Are we past that era, guys?
This goes a long way. Yeah, you're right. It is still wait and see, but this one goes a long way. It's a move. We discussed this, I think, our last podcast. You know, I picked the Phillies as the team that needs to add to their pitching. Dave Dombrowski's all in. You signed Trey Turner. Yes, this was the move that the Phillies had to make. And it's a great matchup. It's one of those old matchups where the Tigers need bats. They need young position players, and they got at least two out of it. Donnie Sands is the former Yankee farmhand that was – it's got a strong bat, but it kind of doesn't have a position. You know, he was kind of a catcher at some point. Still is, I think, listed as a part-time catcher, but that's not his calling card. He's got some pop in his bat. But the other two guys are potential everyday position players for the Tigers, exactly what they need. Soto's exactly what the Phillies need. It's a perfect matchup. Those are the kind of trades you love to see where, you know, the weaknesses are matched up and, you know, and the trade is made. Dombrowski's not messing around. Soto was the guy they absolutely had to have, because if Kimbrough's not Kimbrough anymore, then you've got Soto. Soto can be your short guy. He's a left-handed guy that throws 100 miles an hour, you know, with great stuff and guts on the mound. He's the perfect fit for the Philly bullpen at the back end.
I like the trade a lot. Soto's a terrific pitcher. He was one of these guys, you know, the closers on a bad team, a lot of times they can be toiling in obscurity. Sometimes it overrates a guy because it, you know, he gets a big shiny save total on a bad team, but he's a good one. His strikeout rate dipped a little bit in 2022, but he cut his walk rate as well. So he's a quality piece to add. And Matt Strom's a good one too. He had an above average season with the Red Sox last year, another quality reliever on a bad team who's going to Philly. So you look at their depth chart, I pulled up, you know, roster resource on Fangraphs. They, who are the guys in the mix at the end of games for the Phillies? Alvarado, Soto, Craig Kimbrell, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Andrew Bellotti, Matt Strom, Connor Brogdon, and Nick Nelson. So it looks like a better group now that they made a few additions, right?
Like, how often did we try and scratch our head and wonder who was going to be the guy at the very end of ballgames for the Phillies? Now you just rattled off, at least in my opinion, like three or four names that could potentially close out games for the Phillies. But you mentioned one in Jose Alvarado. And I'm wondering this because, David, you talk a lot about having the variety on your pitching staff. What is the similarity between a guy like Soto and Alvarado now, and how are they different?
Well, both have power arms, that's for sure. But Alvarado's more of a two-seam guy, a movement guy. So even though he can miss bats, he's more of a keep the ball on the ground in Philadelphia, which is, you know, the ball carries in Philly pretty well in their home ballpark. Soto's more of a power guy. He's a gas four seam guy with good off speed to go with it. But he's a guy that's going to challenge you more up in the zone. He's probably more of a swing and a miss guy than Alvarado is. Although you've got two of the premier left-handed power relievers in the game right there. Both of them are regularly in the upper 90s with their fastball. They complement each other because of the movement. One has movement, one has riding action. So, you know, I like that combination. I like the fact that you have different looks. I like guys who can ride it, who can sink it, who give hitters fits on what to look for, release points, diversity. I think it's a big deal. It's an underrated facet. I think the Phillies added to that with Soto.
I mentioned this with the Dodgers discussion, how they have a lot of wiggle room, you know, because they were starting from so high last year. This is the reverse. The Phillies bullpen has a lot of room to grow because last year they had the eighth highest bullpen ERA in the major league. So almost like, oh, there's nowhere to go but up.
One similarity between Soto, Alvarado, David mentioned it too, with when he was talking about Soto, they both pitch with guts. They both bring it in that department. They're not going to shy away. So, you know, be looking forward to that lefty combination in the Philly bullpen coming up here in 2023. All right. So who is your top bullpen in the National League right now? Again, a month away from spring training, trades can still be made. But if we look at it on paper right now, second week of January, who is the top bullpen in each of your eyes in the National League?
Well, you got to, you know, I mean, you go back to front, right? And I still say, you know, and there's probably, you know, this guy's due for a little regression. But if you look at the Mets and the year their closer had and the resources that team has because of their owner, they're probably not done as of yet. And even though you're going to subtract a couple of guys out of there, you know, I still say the Mets are right there because of their closer. So, and we're not looking at a finished product as of yet, because there's still time before spring training and even leading up to the trade deadline as well.
I'm going to stay in the National League East, and I'm going to go with the Braves. Raisel Iglesias, AJ Minter, Colin McHugh, guys that they already had that I like a lot, but picking up Joe Jimenez, Lucas Litke, Kirby Yates even could be a nice comeback there. So I'm going to go with Atlanta.
I'm keeping my eye on the Cardinals, because I think they potentially they could have the dirtiest back end of the bullpen. If guys like Stratton and Pallante, they take another leap forward this year, if you're able to, you know, pair them with Gallegos and Helsley. But again, there's question marks there. Can those two arms do it again? So my pick is definitely going to be in the National League East. My trendy pick, I guess you could say, would be the Cardinals, but I am going to go with Atlanta at the moment for all the reasons that James was talking about. The depth stands out to me. I think they have a little bit more depth than the Mets. I believe neither bullpen is a finished product on January the 10th. So I'm really intrigued to see how the teams keep going in terms of how they address their relief corps. But guys like Yates, Colin McHugh, Lucas Litke, James, they're big for me as well. And the rotation for the Braves, I think, allows their arms to stay fresh better than most teams, if not all teams in the National League. So that's the reason why I'm going to give the slight edge to the Braves at the moment. But guys, like these bullpens in the NL East, they are on the rise here.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in Edwin Diaz. I think he's going to have another great year this year. Maybe not quite to the strikeout level that he had last year, but historically speaking, his strikeout numbers, his swing and miss numbers are off the charts, you know, like as good as anybody in the history of the game. But I will say this, it's a good point, James, that Raisel Iglesias was the best move last year at the trade deadline. That trade, and assuming his contract, he was nails for the Braves down the stretch and gave them depth at the end of the game. He's a closer. He's a setup guy. He's willing to do anything. I love his attitude on the mound too. This guy's a gamer and got big guts on the mound. So Iglesias was the best move in the bullpen of anybody last year.
Yeah, the Braves, you know, they're going to be operating without Kenley Jansen. I don't know if they're going to even skip a beat there as he's off to Boston. But two big moves that the Mets did to support a guy like Edwin Diaz, Brooks Raley, David Robertson. Again, the depth is so much deeper now for the Mets heading into 2023, and I don't think they are done. So we'll see what happens a month away from pitchers and catchers here. All right, guys, let's get into our Yankee segment here. And this is a different type of Yankees talk, because we're really not addressing anything on the 26-man roster, which is a change here. Last week, the Yankees made some headlines. They brought in two very respected former general managers who've had track records of success, and they both have a deep background in scouting. They brought in Brian Sabian, three-time World Series winning general manager with the San Francisco Giants. They also brought in Omar Minaya, who is a Queens native, one former Mets GM, former Expos GM. And this is an interesting topic because we've all heard the narrative in recent years. Like, if you're a Yankee fan, you've been told that there is a balance, a healthy mixture between analytics and scouting in terms of decision-making within the Yankees baseball operations department. So if there is that mix there, the question is, what do these hires mean? Like, are they shifting more toward the scouting angle? Are there going to be more voices that have the heavier scouting background? Are they going to be louder in the decision-making room? If it's already been a mix of these two factions, analytics and scouting information, then what do two more highly respected veteran baseball people being in the fold, what does it mean for the Yankees baseball operations department?
Well, you know, I could tell you in my dealings with Brian Cashman, and when I was interviewed for the pitching coach job a few years ago, one of the things he told me in that interview was something that has stuck with me. And that is, he always defers. He always says, look, the best thing I've done as general manager of the Yankees is hire well. I hire good people around me, and I'm smart enough to know what I don't know. And I'll never forget the way he phrased that, the way he said that. And it's really true. And this falls right in line with that philosophy. These are two high quality people, Brian Sabia and Omar Minaya. Omar Minaya too gives him a long reach in terms of networking through Latin America, through scouting, through people relationships. So it just makes sense. It's not really about, to me, about the battle between modern baseball and analytics and old school philosophy and scouting. I mean, both of these guys were general managers. They both understand all aspects of the game. They both have their roots in scouting. So yes, as far as evaluating your own system, that's going to really help the Yankees having these two guys in place. And I think maybe if you look at the Yankees, some of the guys they've lost in the Rule 5 drafts, whether it's Garrett Whitlock up to the Rule 5 to Boston or some other guys along the way, I think self-evaluating is one of the most important things you can do in your organization now. And the Yankees always seem to get plucked every year in the Rule 5 draft, and the 40-man roster, every roster spot is such a commodity nowadays. So it's all the more important to protect those resources. And when you bring in Brian Sabian and Omar Minaya, that's going to help you in that category as much as anything else, along with the fact that they've done just about everything in this game from soup to nuts, from scouting to general manager. They understand every aspect of the game. Great hires by Brian Cashman. He continues to surround himself with the best people he can find. And it makes sense. You know, I think they're going to pay dividends. Both of those guys are going to pay big dividends for the Yankees.
Two smart guys join the organization. Can't be anything but a good thing. It's also kind of cool that it's a little bit of a full circle moment for Brian Sabian, who started off in the Yankees front office, Brian Cashman, way back in the 80s. And eventually he was the longtime GM with the Giants. But I'm with you, Coney. I think these are great moves. And I do think the stats versus scouts war and all this, the controversy over the last few years, I feel like that's so overblown, and that in Major League Baseball in 2023, we don't need to be relitigating the battles from 20 years ago.
I think a lot of fans, and I'm guilty of it too, in certain aspects, when I hear teams speak, whether it's players, executives, or whatever, you want their answers to mean more. So when people ask, well, what roles are these two gentlemen going to have in the Yankees baseball operations department? Basically, it was, another voice, another eye to have. Obviously, they have deep respected backgrounds. They have a sharp track record, but that's what they are. I don't know if you need to dig deeper than that. I think you just have two more respective voices in the room where they're making decisions. It's two other important opinions to lean on, to have at your disposal. Brian Cashman always makes the analogy, he needs to have every tool in the toolbox. Well, he just got two, Black & Decker brand new appliances, top of the line type of machines there. But yeah, I think it could be as simple as that. That's what they have. They have two more widely respected individuals in the baseball industry now under the Yankees brand. So I'm not sure it's anything more than that for Yankees baseball operations. I will say this, though. We're about a month away from pitchers and catchers. And I think if you ask a lot of Yankee fans, they would have expected that left field would have been addressed by now within the Yankees offseason. So again, 3 weeks to go until pitchers and catchers. Let's bring Dan Rourke in here, our fantastic producer, big time Yankee fan. If you haven't checked out his channel, Yankees Avenue, please do so. It's terrific. And Dan may have been coming off a weekend of partying, because he is Elvis Presley disciple. It was the King's birthday over the weekend, so we may not have Dan at his most sharpest state here. But Dan, from a Yankees fan perspective, are we concerned? Are we a bit scared that left field has not been definitively addressed by the Yankees?
No, I wouldn't say I'm concerned, but I think there's two ways you can look at it. I mean, the Yankees' current lineup right now is good enough, I think, to win the AL East. But that's not like the big monkey on their back, right? It's the Houston Astros. So while I would love Brian Reynolds, want him very badly, if the Pirates are actually going to ask for Anthony Volpe, I can't say I blame the Yankees for not making that trade. So as it stands right now, you either have Oswaldo Cabrera, you have Aaron Hicks. Now, Waldo definitely intrigues me because he somehow, and I didn't realize this until like a week ago, he what only played 300 innings in right field. He finished sixth among all American League right fielders in defensive runs saved, which is just nuts. And I know left field in Yankee Stadium is like a different animal than right field, but I think he's definitely capable. And offensively, I mean, his overall numbers were definitely solid enough. I think he finished like a 111 WRC plus in like 40 games. But from September 6th on, Oswaldo Cabrera had a 960 OPS with six home runs. So the dude definitely can do it with the bat. So at least to get you by until the deadline, I think we're fine. Because once again, this team that we have right now is still, well, not like maybe by a landslide, I still consider them to be the favorite in the AL East. It just, you may have to reassess. And I expect them to come deadline to close the gap as much as possible with Houston.
David, what do you think? Is the opening day left fielder for the Yankees on their current roster?
Probably so at this point. And they could probably take it to the trade deadline if need be, if they really want to. Obviously, you know, Oswaldo Cabrera came up and was a fan favorite. He provides so much energy. Aaron Hicks has the long-term deal. He's still owed, I think, three more years on his deal. You got to give him another shot just to see what he looks like in spring training rather than just dump him at this point. The Yankees are waiting on outfielders to develop in their system. Whether it's Pereira that's coming up, maybe their top prospect. Is Floreal finally going to get a chance? It doesn't look like they trust his swing and miss profile, that he swings and miss too much to put him on an everyday role in the big leagues and put him in left field. I will say there's a couple of sleepers in camp that they've non-roster invitees. Rafael Ortega is a name to watch. A couple of years ago had really good numbers with the Cubs, hit 290, 11 home runs, left-hander with some pop profiles that he might play up at Yankee Stadium. He's due for a bounce back. So he might be an interesting guy to follow. And maybe he can push his way in spring training and show somebody something. Maybe there's a surprise there somewhere, but you just get the feeling that they're waiting on Brian Reynolds, whether that takes us to the trade deadline or even, at some point when if he's going to be traded, the Yankees are going to be there waiting for him. And obviously the acquisition cost is the key for the Yankees. And, the middle infield still the priority for me. Left field, we can work it out. You can kind of sit there for a while and wait in left field. You got to figure out the middle infield part and whether Anthony Volpe is ready or not. Is he going to be given a legitimate shot in spring training? As we've heard, Brian Cashman told him, hey, come into spring training ready. You're going to get a legitimate look. We've already seen Oswald Peraza. We know he's got some skills and he presented himself very well. So to me, that whole middle infield thing is really interesting. And what happens with the future of Gleyber Torres as well? Is Gleyber Torres with a bounce back year last year? What's he going to look like in spring training? What's he going to look like this year? What type of year and numbers is he going to put up? How does this whole middle infield thing shake down? To me, it's really the most important thing for the Yankees. Left field can wait for a minute right now and see what happens with Brian Reynolds, because Brian Reynolds is that good. And he's that perfect of a fit for the Yankees that you kind of wait for him and see if that takes you to the trade deadline or not. In the meantime, yeah, let's filter through some guys, some non-roster guys. Let's see if Hicks can rebound. Let's see if Oswaldo Cabrera looks like he did last year. Give him a legitimate shot. But other than that, I think they're waiting on Brian Reynolds at this point and however long that takes.
Thursday, March 30th at Yankee Stadium against the Giants, opening day. I think the left fielder is going to be Oswaldo Cabrera against Logan Webb of the Giants, a right-hander with Cabrera batting left-handed there. So I think there weren't a whole lot of impact outfielders on the free agent market. I like Brandon Nimmo a lot. He went back to the Mets. The White Sox go 5 years, $75 million for Andrew Benintendi, which sounds a little steep. Beyond that, I don't know if there's anybody that the Yankees should have really gone out and splurged on in free agency if you don't get those guys. So you could do worse than the Cabrera Hicks platoon of sorts out in left field. Dan dropping the knowledge with WRC plus. It was 111. If OPS plus is your thing, he was at 109. Moral of the story, Cabrera came up and he was an above average big league bat. And we saw what he could do in the field. The one thing with Cabrera is that he also has value moving all around the diamond as sort of maybe this year he'll be like a better version of Marwin Gonzalez from the 2022 roster. So Cabrera can fill in a lot of different spots. Maybe that means he doesn't get, you know, 600 plate appearances on left field, but he's going to move around. He can get a bulk of the starts in left at first and then see where you are at the deadline.
Play devil's advocate. I could say, hey, what I saw from Cabrera, I liked. I also liked what I saw in the first 40 games from Greg Bird and Mike Ford when they were coming up. At the same time, his versatility really sticks out. So yeah, if it's not left field, he may be part of the answer to what David's trying to figure out with the middle infield. We'll wait and see. It's a good problem to have in regards to Cabrera in that respect. You mentioned Rafael Ortega. If you haven't listened to Talking Yanks from last week, Jimmy and Jake, they went a little deeper into some of these candidates that the Yankees brought in that could be looked at as like terrific minor league depth at AAA. But Ortega, I think they were saying how he could be a candidate that would really benefit from playing at Yankee Stadium. And I'm not saying that he is the answer and he's going to get some run here as the potential left fielder, but they were, you know, looking at numbers and park factors and stuff like that. And I think he would have hit like six more home runs had his games been at Yankee Stadium. So yeah, he does have some pop. That's the one that's probably the most intriguing. James, you were mentioning some free agents that are still out there. I don't know if they're necessarily as in love with a guy like Jerks and Profar as they were in the past. We always heard them linked to that name in the past. He's still out there. What could he command? Maybe they could bring him in if it's a friendly dollar amount in their eyes. Who knows? But at this point, yeah, I'm going to lean into the fact that that left fielder is probably in-house right now when we look toward opening day against Logan Webb and the Giants, who maybe he has his extension, James. Who knows? But yeah, if I had to guess right now, I would pick Oswaldo Cabrera as the opening day left fielder for the Yankees. Dan, would that would be okay with you? You're the biggest Yankee fan I know.
Oswaldo Cabrera in left field?
You've leapfrogged a lot of, you know, friends of mine and stuff. You are by far the number one Yankee fan I know. So would that be okay for you?
Yeah, I mean, totally. I mean, I'm always looked at, I feel like, as an irrational Yankee fan. Regular season-wise, that's not so much the case. I mean, like, I'm totally content rolling him out there. It's just October, is he going to be good enough or not? Because, I mean, the team you put out on opening day doesn't have to be the team you put out on October. We all know that, obviously. So, cool with it. It's just, you know, like we've all been saying, reassess at the deadline. If he's been good, great. Maybe you keep him there. If not, then maybe you can try and get Brian Reynolds again. But I'm cool with it. I like Waldo. He's very easy to like and easy to root for. He's got a good smile and he's a good player. So,
like, you're describing yourself, man.
Speed and defense is a premium this year. And we don't know really as far as the new rules, how they're going to play. The new schedule, the new rules, base stealing, how much is it going to be up this year? Only two pickoffs to first base, bigger bases, a lot to factor in here. Playing defense is a big deal too.
So yeah,
speed and defense are at a premium this year. Oswaldo Cabrera has both of those.
Yeah, he's part of another reason why I'm really excited for this team is because, like, the athleticism as a whole. I mean, not only are you going to get Oswaldo Cabrera potentially for a full season, Anthony Volpe for full season, 3/4 of the season, full season of Harrison Bader too. So, like, the overall team, I mean, you talk about the jump from athleticism from 21 to 22, kind of almost the same jump last year to this year as well with, like, the young kids and a full season of Bader. So,
one last thing before we leave here, because, David, you just brought up the new rules, the emphasis on speed and athleticism. How much more should we be paying attention to spring training battles? Let's go beyond the Yankees here. How much does that need our attention when we take a look at the Grapefruit League games and the Cactus League games?
I think we watch it closely, without a doubt. I think that's probably what some of the Yankees prospects are going to really pay dividends for the Yankees. Oswald Peraza, great minor league numbers running the bases. Anthony Volpe, great minor league numbers running the bases, stolen base numbers. Oswaldo Cabrera, same thing. So you have this mixture of all around ball players that the Yankees have been bringing along for a while now. And, you know, I think it's time to pay dividends. That, to me, it's sort of linked to what they do with middle infield and what the future at third base is. You know, it's obvious that they're committed to Josh Donaldson, at least for now. But at some point, this is probably his last year as a Yankee, or how long, you know, how long, you know, whether he can rebound or not this year in the first half of the year. So it's not only up the middle, it's really the whole infield other than Rizzo at first. It's like, what's this going to look like in the future? Does Volpe really plug in at second base? Is Peraza really the shortstop of the future? What about third base? How do you mix this thing up? To me, is the most important feature for the Yankees. Now, Josh Donaldson's got to hit the ball a long way to be valuable. We know his defense was good last year, gold glove caliber. But he needs to hit the ball out of the ballpark to provide value, because he provides no value running the bases in terms of base running. So, yes, can he bounce back? And what's the future at third base as well? To me, it's on the infield with the Yankees. That's the most important thing going on right now, because the prospects are here knocking on the door, and we're going to see him in spring training.
Will some of these questions be answered before spring training or in spring training? I think for the Yankees and their fans, that's what they are wondering right now here in the second week of January. All right, guys, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Enjoy the NFL playoffs. I don't even know if the Chiefs are playing this weekend. Are they like, what seed are the Chiefs here, David? Do they have a bye, or they
got a bye.
They're got the number top one. Seed? Okay.
They got the top seed.
Okay, so if you didn't believe me at the very beginning of the episode, I have not watched NFL football this entire year. We'll enjoy the first round of the playoffs. So we'll keep an eye on what's going on with the baseball hot stove. That is going to do it for this episode. Again, please subscribe to our YouTube channel so you do not miss a beat of what we are streaming each and every week. For David, for James, and our excellent producer, Dan Rourke, this is Justin Shackle. We will talk to you next week on Toe in the Slab, Pitching with David Cone, a production of John Boy Media.